CSX, you are in the garage. I'm Jim O'Brien, along with Ryan Logan here. And we always open up the garage with the Doors, play a little Doors music. So a little Alabama song for you there. I know it's the wrong SEC school, but still. Bill Goldberg, our guest. How are you, buddy?
I was doing good until you said Alabama first thing in the morning.
Boy, I just freaking nailed this interview, didn't I, man? All right, fine. I want to talk to you, being a gearhead, because I think so many people know you, Bill, for, you know, obviously wrestling and the movies you've done, but your collection of cars is unbelievable, and the one that I keep drooling over is that GTX convertible you've got.
Yeah, you know, it's a weird story, man. I mean, as a kid, all my friends' brothers had just the coolest, colorful, fastest cars that I could ever imagine having. And I never had any, and I swore that when I got to a position, I would acquire those cars that so indelibly left an impression in my memory as a kid. And, you know, I had a 67 Shelby GT500, beautiful car, but I bought that because my orthodontist had one as a kid, and you know, the only smile on my face when I was in his office was when I looked out the window and I checked out his car. So I just tried to rekindle my childhood, you know, the good days and the happy memories and the simple times by filling my garage with what I saw back in those days. And, you know, I'm very lucky that a couple of the ones that I've chosen are quite valuable. But at the end of the day, they all evoke a feeling that, you know, I don't think generations to come are ever going to be able to experience.
You know, to your point, I went to D.C. After we'd done the Portland one, I flew out to Washington, D.C. and got to drive the Charger Hellcat. And we were out there, and we drove out to Summit Point, which from D.C. is like an hour and a half drive out there. So we get to the halfway point. You remember, you've done these press tours. So you get to a halfway point, you stop, and they feed you something and let you look at the car. There was a 19-year-old kid with his girlfriend standing in the rain, because, of course, it rains at all these press events, and they were waiting to see a Hellcat. And that's exactly what you're talking about. I'm thinking to myself, there's just not a lot of cars anymore that create that passion. But to see this kid who was supposed to go up and get milk for his mom, and when he found out a Hellcat was on the way, he wasn't going to leave until he saw it. I mean, when we were growing up, that's what you did. You would see these badass cars, and you would hang just so you could get a peek at one of them.
Yeah, and, you know, to speak to that point, As we speak, I'm getting my garage ready for a visit from Leno this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, he's bringing a show over. And yesterday, I got my best friend in town. I got my mechanic and his buddy and this guy. And I got like six guys over the house. We're all wrenching on cars. My mechanic, you know, got a Ralph Strasser. He was a 30-year shop teacher in Oceanside, California. You know, the guy sweats more information out than I could ever gain in the automotive world. So when he works on my stuff and he and I work on it together, it's a learning process. You know, he's passing it down. I enjoy that. And I wonder how many generations are left that are going to experience that, if any. And I was thinking about that yesterday. You know, we have a responsibility. I mean, he passed it down to me. I pass it down to my kid. My kid hopefully keeps it alive. You know, it's automotive culture, and you know, it's something that's very special in it, and it defines us as Americans. I believe, and you know, it's a wonderful thing. But I feel as though we're losing that individuality. But
I agree. I mean, you look at, like, when we joke about NASCAR and stuff and everyone does the redneck thing, but you think about it, that's the last where we hold on to. Although I'm glad to see sports car racing is starting to come back and you're seeing more IMSA racing with the GTs and stuff. And you just did some stuff with Dodge with the ACR, right? So, I mean, the Viper itself is just one of those rare cars that's still around that captures your imagination.
No question. I mean, hey, I just did the event, you know, in Scottsdale, the Bondurant. They made up for the raining at PIR and let us tool around and at Bondurant and the Viper and, you know, the Charger and the Challenger. And I spent most of the day in the Viper because trying to redeem myself for my Viper Cup wreck a couple of years ago. And, you know, and actually I had a hell of a week last week. Anybody who follows me on social media experienced it, but let's see, one day I flew to Scottsdale, did the event for Bondurant and Dodge. 1 o'clock in the morning, I flew on a red eye to Daytona, was picked up by Angie Skinner, went straight over to the track, sat in Mike Skinner's backup Craftsman truck to get some seat time in it before it flew to Europe the next day, because I'm driving it at Goodwood. And what brought up that was, you talk about rednecks, NASCAR. You know, think about Goldberg over in London at Lord March's property at Goodwood, and yeah. Skinner's backup truck with 800 horsepower, and, you know, the big Who's Next sticker on the back of it. You know, that's a it's funny because you talk about the redneck aspect of it, but, you know, and I know Skinner, I've known him for a very long time, and I wonder how he blends over there, but they really get a kick out of the horsepower, the loudness, you know, the feeling you get by listening and watching that type of an engine, that type of a, it's irreplaceable.
Well, and you so know, look at Top Gear,
F1 cars, yeah. And everything. You know, it's really good. It's going to stand out. And it's going to be fun. And you know, it's how we're looked at. And why not reinforce it by putting me in the truck? So
hey, well, and so that really was you, because on Instagram that was a great picture of you just launching that thing out of the pits. But to, you know, what you're talking about with American cars, Top Gear and Jeremy Clarkson. I mean, people realize the most watched show, the most non-fictional show as far as people watching in the world ever. It was on like every country except France at one point. And I remember, like, as much as he would bash the Americans and the design and stuff, he still went out and bought a Ford GT. So at the end of the day, yep. There's a love affair with American cars. You're right. It's nowhere else in the world.
No question. And it's something that separates us. And I believe it's part of our identity that's being lost. I'm all for advancement. And hey, self-driving cars, I mean, you're never going to sell me on that one. It's just not going to happen. You know, like I said, man, I'm up there cleaning the garage and tooling on stuff, getting ready for Leno to come over. It brings back every memory. It's just a cool feeling, and it's something that you really want everyone to experience.
You going to let him drive the lawman?
Hell no.
Oh, come on now. You got how many miles? For folks who don't understand how rare this car is, I called bullshit when I first saw it. Pardon my language. When I saw you had it, I'm like, he's got that car. It's the only, isn't it the only automatic 429 in the world?
It sure is. Jeez. It was one of two they built. You know, one is the press car, and one is the car that went out on the tour. And I guess the one that went out on the tour got crushed. They sent a C-130 back for the one I currently own. And, you know, it means a lot to me, man. I live 10 minutes from the back gate of Pendleton. I own a Muay Thai gym near the front gate of Pendleton. I can't tell you how much I appreciate what the men and women of our armed forces do for our country, and to know the lineage of this Boss 429 that ends in serial 429, by the way.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, it's really cool, man. It is. I mean, I put it on a trailer and take it down when, you know, a number of people come back for deployment. And honestly, I've met two kids throughout the years that have photos of their dad in that car back in Vietnam in the early 70s.
Really? Man, that's
awesome. Yeah, you talk about having chills up and down your spine. Listen to a kid that tells you that story.
Yeah, I grew up out there watching the I lived in Vista. So, you know, and watching the guys in the Marines out of Pendleton, man, the work they did out there. Bill Goldberg in the garage with us at Goldberg on Twitter is a must follow. And then BillGoldberg.com, a great website as well. So what are you going to show Leno? Can you tell us what is he going to check out?
Well, here's the icing on top of the cake is that they've requested for my son to learn how to do his first drive on Leno's show. So I think we're going to get some footage of a 9-year-old driving a 67 Mercury F-100 truck, 3 on the tree.
That was your wife's family's truck or similar?
It was the truck she learned, and every sibling in her family learned how to drive in, and that's we're going to pass it down, man. That's what they're for. You know,
that's awesome.
That's why I've got the most expensive 67 Mercury in the history of the world, because it means so much to him, you know, and you know, she called her father and told him about the idea, and he broke into tears. You know, that's cool, man. I mean, not that anybody would cry, but the fact that he was so happy that somebody would do that, and that, you know, number one, we would take the time to restore a vehicle. It's just really cool. The memories are priceless.
I've got my first car was a 74 Vega. It was a POS, I'll admit that. But when I go to the Woodward Dream Cruise and I see a Vega in any shape or form, it still takes me back to being 16, living in Southern California, and driving and leaving the house and being able to drive anywhere I wanted to go. And you're right. There's something about it that is uniquely just it's American, man, to get on the road and get gone.
Hey, man, whether it's your first kiss or whether it's whatever, I mean, there's so many stories that are to be had in cars. It plays so much with your makeup. It truly does. And it's, you know, hey, at the end of the day, in a car is an extension of your personality.
So out of all your wrestling friends, is there one that's a gearhead that we'd maybe be surprised to know?
You know what? I mean, I don't really want to. I don't know. If I tell you, then it's going to actually give information about him that he doesn't like people knowing anything about him. But I'm going to spill the beans. Brock Lesnar called me about 2 years ago and said he wanted a Hemi car. And it's funny because I hooked him up with the Hendrick Motorsports. I found him a car that was in North Carolina, called my buddies at Hendrick Motorsports. They sent somebody down there to look at it. They gave me the thumbs up. Brock was excited. He bought that car and another one that they sold him.
Really?
And I don't know. I think a month later, he called me and grenaded the Hemi. he's a big time gearhead, man. He likes it for the same reason I do. I mean, obviously, people know Cena collects cars, and I don't know him well at all, and I've never seen his collection. But I mean, I see he's got some cool wing cars and stuff, and. So I can greatly appreciate that, man. But yeah, Brock's the one.
Are we going to ever see you jump in WWE or at a WrestleMania or anything coming back?
Oh man, you're going to have to ask that question to Vince McMahon. Am I open to it? I think I've gotten soft at my old age. You know, and I got a 9-year-old boy who would just probably die to see me smashing somebody in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. You never say never.
I'm 26, and I would die to see that still. Just a big wrestling fan. But when I saw Sting come back, I was like, okay, Goldberg, he's the next one. He's the next one coming in.
The problem is, you guys wouldn't recognize me, man. I'm like skinny compared to what I was back in the day. People don't understand. They say, Goldberg, man, you're not gigantic anymore. Well, shit, I don't wake up in the morning and drink a half a pot of coffee and train for 3 hours.
Right.
I wake up and drink a I don't know what they call it, a little yogurt. And I watch SpongeBob with my kid.
It's a visual. It's just a strange visual. But, Bill, you know, talking about your kid, though, I mean, look at Bob Seger here in Detroit. Bob's 72 tomorrow on his birthday. And it was his kids that got him to get back out on the road like 10 years ago because his kids had never seen him perform live. So it is a pretty powerful pull, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, hey, I never, ever in my wildest dreams imagined I would be considering it at this age. I think I bagged on Ric Flair. About 20 years ago for wrestling over the age of 40. And, you know, I'm one click away from the big one. So I don't know, man. At the end of the day, age is just a number. And, I mean, I train Muay Thai 3 to 5 days a week. And, you know, I'm sparring with 18-year-old kids. And I could still go out there and hold my own, I do believe.
Okay, so what car do you not have in your collection? If I said, Bill Goldberg, you can have any car in the world, what do you want?
Well, that's simple. 94 F1 McLaren.
The Senna car?
Absolutely. No question. I've been lucky enough to drive some really cool cars in my life. And one weekend, I'll never forget, my brother's a Ferrari collector. So I fly to Aspen, and he and my two brothers and I go out through the canyon in an F40, an F50, and an Enzo. And we're having some serious fun that day. And then the next day, I fly out to Northern California, and I get to go to a supercar party as we were filming the supercar episode of Automaniac. And I get to drive an F1 on a track. you know, to me, that's the car. I had an opportunity to buy them when they were about a million. And I balked at it for, like, the ignoramus that I am. But that's the car. I mean, there's no question. Hands down, that's the one I want.
So how many times have you watched the documentary Senna?
Oh, man, many.
Every gearhead, you're not alone. Every gearhead I know, every race car driver, anyone who's involved who really has a passion for motorsports, you bring that movie up, man. You could be having the shittiest day in the world. You sit down and watch it, and we know he dies at the end. But the life he led and the passion he had for cars is unparalleled.
Unbelievable, you know, and you see guys like that, and you just, you're so appreciative that there are still people in the world that are able to find enjoyment out of simple things. And, you know, the love of the automobile is really basic. And it's just so cool. Hey, man, it's, I don't know, 8:30 in the morning at my house here in California, and I can't wait to get to my garage and get my hands greasy today.
You're awesome. Well, we're not going to keep you, but I got to ask you, so what's your highest ticket as far as speeding goes? What'd you get pegged for, and which one did you get out of because you're Goldberg?
Oh, I'm a responsible celebrity. I can't condone anything like that. I will remain, my ticket will remain anonymous, even the one that I didn't get. You know what? Hey, at the end of the day, I like to think that I'm a very responsible celebrity, and I don't, I went on Bull Run, the actual Bull Run, the first leg. My wife and I got on a plane and left afterwards, because it's just not responsible doing that crap on the streets. You know, on a track at Road Atlanta, I was passed on both sides going 165 miles an hour.
Damn.
And that's an interesting thing. And, you know, at the end of the day, I've gotten close to the 200 thing, but it was on a track, so I try not to do it on the road. Hey, people don't remember me anymore. I'm getting too small, so I can't rely on the Goldberg thing to pull me out of a ticket. So.
Whatever, dude. All right, hey, the invitation for the Woodward Dream Cruise is open to you. Ken Langenfelter here in Detroit has one of the greatest Ferrari collections in the world, and I know we would get you over there and go check that out. So the door's open, man. Get back here sometime. We'd love to see you.
You got it, guys. I appreciate it very much. And if I can say some kind words about Ken, he's one of the nicest guys in the business. And not only does he have great taste, but he takes care of his customers. And he's just, at the end of the day, one of the nicest guys in the business. So thank you, guys. I appreciate it greatly. And everybody in automotive wonderland out there, you know, go out and drive. And guess what? Buy a stick shift, for God's sakes. Keep it going.
Gotti, yeah, heaven forbid somebody learns how to drive a stick shift and change their own tire. Yeah,
no
really.
Idea. I have no idea.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
Be good, gentlemen.
See you, bud.
You got it.
There he goes. Bill Goldberg. Well, that didn't suck.
No, that was cool, man.
He's exactly what you'd expect, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's just I mean, you can tell all those guys. We've talked to a couple wrestlers now, and I mean, obviously, that's where his roots came from. Was wrestling. He came out, and now he's into all the car. You know what I mean? I mean, he's always been into cars, but you can tell all these guys are just down to earth dudes, man. Normal people, not the celebrities that you know come to know.
He left the door open too for coming back, didn't he? Big time.
Yeah, he's coming back.
With the kids, and I was saying about Seeger. It's a fact. Seeger was. It's 2004 was done after he got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but the idea of his kids seeing him perform was powerful.
The only reason I say that he will come back now is because Vince let Sting back, or hell, not even back,
brought
let Sting
back.
In.
Yeah.
He brought Sting in. That was supposed to never happen because of how much they hated each other. And I know Vince and Goldberg were the same with WCW, WWE. So, I don't know, but that would be, I mean, and he says nobody, he right the first 3 seconds of his music playing, that crowd would go nuts.
Oh, I know.
You know?
You know, we could, I mean, once this goes up, I'm sure a podcast with Goldberg is, it's money.
Right.
I mean, people are going to be going nuts for it. Well, this is cool. All right. I got to get Ken Langenfelter on next week. I'll work on that one for the podcast. If you guys have ideas, suggestions, you can hit me up on Twitter at Jim and the D. Also, Ryan Logan 87, is that right?
Yeah.
On Twitter? Yeah. He's pretty much just stalking all the traffic reporters in Detroit.
No.
Other than that, it's fine.
Come on,
so,
you can get me in trouble.
Oh, whatever. I think she's cute, too. I'm married. I'm not dead. I mean, you know, we'll do that. So, yeah, I totally forgotten. I just go through door songs and try to play a new one.
and here he played his rival.
Yeah, here he is like a Georgia stud linebacker, and I play the Alabama song, like, dummy. Shut up, Morrison.
Yeah, he's got to wake up after fight with phones for 45 minutes to listen to Alabama.
In the garage, man. All right, it's our weekly podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.